I'm Duncan McLeod.
And I'm Rechard van der Berg.
This is Talk Central, episode 99, for the weekend starting Friday, 30 May 2014.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central,
on Google Plus at Plus Tech Central,
and on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about Jacob Zuma's new cabinet and try not to get too apoplectic about it, a second MVNO on the way, and the very geeky subject of radio frequency spectrum in the millimeter wave band.
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Duncan and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, Rechard, but first we need to pay the bills. We'll be back just after this.
He's never been happier.
Yeah.
Since we got YaClick satellite internet at the farm, he gets his grain prices faster.
Yeah.
The weather reports faster.
Yeah.
Does the banking faster.
Yeah.
And checks his team score.
Yeah.
Much faster.
Say yeah to YaClick internet access, wherever you are. YaClick, available from Vox Telecom and Atlantic. SMS your name to 48484 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Cool, welcome to the show. Rechard, how's it?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. New cabinet this week. I think it took the whole industry by surprise. I think the industry's feeling a bit shocked by the developments. Yunus Karim gone, not just from the communications portfolio, but from the cabinet entirely.
Yeah, I think we kind of experienced the worst case scenario in the reshuffle that we could have asked for.
Worst case scenario indeed. I think what we've seen is the splitting of the Department of Communications. There's now a new Department of Communications, which is in fact entirely a new government department, with the DOC being renamed as the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. Effectively, it's going to look after the telecoms industry and the post office, and that's going to be headed by former State Security Minister Siyabonga Cwele, while the new Department of Communications, which is in effect a new department, is being made up of bizarrely ICASA, one of whose main roles is regulating the telecommunications industry, as well as the SABC, GCIS, which is the government's communications arm, as well as the MDDA and one or two other bits and pieces, Brand South Africa, and I think there's one or two others as well. But critics have already labelled this new Department of Communications as a Department of Information, and the harsher critics have suggested it's a new Department of Propaganda.
Yeah, look, I mean, if you consider that the Brand South Africa is in there too, I mean, I think, yeah, the lines have certainly been skewed, and it's not what we need. I mean, we came so close to, I think, seeing light at the end of the tunnel with Yusuf Karim.
Yeah, we were making progress under Yunus Karim. He was doing a lot. Sure, he hadn't made a lot of progress on the almost seemingly intractable issue of digital terrestrial television migration and the war between MultiChoice and ETV. But he did put a practical solution on the table. I'm not sure it was the best solution, but it was certainly a practical solution. MultiChoice didn't agree with that solution, but I think this minister was making progress. He was consultative. He was doing well on in terms of improving South Africa's broadband policy and strategy. He was deadline driven. He set fairly aggressive deadlines, and he stuck to them for the most part. He was communicative, which his predecessor certainly wasn't. Mm-hmm. He talked to the media. He engaged with a wide range of industry stakeholders, and I think that generally speaking, with the possible exception of MultiChoice, with the likely exception of MultiChoice, I should say that the industry is disappointed in these developments, and that for the fifth year in a row we have a fifth communications minister. In fact, we're going on for the sixth communications minister if I'm not mistaken, under the Zuma administration. At least under Thabo Mbeki, there was some stability in that department. Ivy Matsepe Kasaburi, as useless as she may have been, certainly there was at least continuity there. Mm-hmm. He didn't chop and change his communications minister every 9 to 12 months, which is what Zuma's doing, and it's leading to absolute chaos. Nothing's getting done in the sector, and we can see that through the delays in digital migration and all the other problems that we're facing, the lack of access to additional spectrum being awarded to mobile operators into other prospective broadband companies. Now I'm afraid there's just more delay on the table as we try and figure out what on earth this new situation means. I mean, it's not even clear at the moment which of these two new departments is going to look after the digital migration project. I've been unable to get clarity on that from them. And so it just suggests that there's going to be at least a few months of no progress at all. And then probably several more months while the new minister gets on top of the new ministers get on top of the issues around this. There have been suggestions from some legal experts that, in fact, the Zuma's decision here is the split of this department actually can't happen under the law without significant legislative changes. If that's true, then we're looking at years of delay. All for what I can see is the need, perceived need by Zuma and perhaps his advisors to create a department that specifically looks after government's image and presumably the president's image too.
We've taken a major step back.
All at the expense of a sector that has been abused for years through the chopping, changing of ministries and the management of a communications portfolio by more than one minister who was simply not suited for the job. So, big mess, and I'm very despondent about the whole situation, but we're going to come back to that in our winner and loser section. I think it's quite obvious who our loser this week is going to be. But let's move along to happier things, Rachot.
Yes.
Story we broke this week, and unfortunately we can't name the company yet, but we will be able to do that probably next week. And that's a new MVNO, or mobile virtual network operator, only the second in South Africa after Virgin Mobile. And that's going to come on stream soon. And it's a major JSE listed company. And interesting that we're seeing this now. It's going to be launched on the back of a new MVNE player. That's a mobile virtual network enabler company that was founded by the former CEO of Virgin Mobile South Africa. So a lot of experience in the game. And he's talking to a range of companies. He says there's a lot of interest among the banks as well to launch a mobile brand. So I think we may see this MVNO space finally starting to hot up. It's been 8 years now since Virgin Mobile was launched, when Richard Branson came down to South Africa and jumped off a building and got into a jet fighter in Cape Town and did what Richard Branson does best. But would you consider moving to an MVNO, or would you prefer to be with
them? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, unless there's particular value in it for me, I would certainly feel safer just being with, you know, the actual operator that's running the infrastructure. I can certainly see merits in it. Whatever happened to the likes of Red Bull, though they weren't an MVNO.
They weren't an MVNO. A lot of people do actually mix them up with an MVNO. They're more of a sort of a brand licensee. The CLC manages everything on their behalf.
Sure.
I don't know how they've done, actually. They don't disclose numbers. I certainly see them around, and in if I go to a shopping centre and I walk around, and I'll see the Red Bull mobile branding. Yes. So they are there. I don't think they're particularly big, but a lot of these MVNO plays are by necessity going to be niche players.
For sure. Especially if you look at banks, I think also their customers, it'll be probably an easy upgrade path or easy path to interact with their service provider. There could be specific benefits depending on the company, the bank or the retailer that we're talking about.
Get free airtime. I mean, I could see a brand like FNB warming to the idea of an MVNO. And I mean, they already offer so many mobile services through their app and their web banking platform. It could be a logical extension for them.
And they could essentially ship. I mean, we know that they sell devices. They sell devices.
They've already got a SIM card. Yeah. In fact, you can actually make telephone calls through their app.
Yes,
through their mobile banking app. I mean,
it's just a formal extension of that.
Exactly,
and, you can make calls over the network as opposed to over the internet.
I'd be surprised, in fact, if F&B isn't looking at it.
Mm. Mm. No, I agree. Mm. Look, I think it's more competition is always better. More options for customers are always better.
Yeah.
And if there's tight integration with the brand that is actually launching the MVNO, I can certainly see a lot of value for a niche market, like you said.
And I could imagine it as well in things that people are very loyal about, like their sports team. I mean, which rugby team do you support, for example?
Sharks and Stormers, I have to say.
So let's say you're a Stormers supporter, for example. I mean, I would imagine that there's so many avid Sharks or Bulls or Stormers fans. I could imagine them warming to the idea of using a Stormers or a Bulls MVNO.
Yeah. Do you think there's an opportunity to zero rate certain things that would allow customers to then make use of either information or a service?
Sure. Of course. Absolutely. I think that's. There's so many ideas you can. For example, if you were to start a Sharks MVNO, you could provide zero-rated access to the Sharks website or to some Sharks radio station or live access to the games at zero charge, that sort of thing. So, I mean, there's so many ways you can play this depending on what brand you are and that sort of thing. So I think the MVNO game, it's been a bit late coming to South Africa, actually. The MVNOs have been huge in Europe for many years. So hopefully this announcement that's going to be made next week about this big JSE-listed retailer is going to kickstart a big move towards MVNOs. The big problem in South Africa is that Vodacom and MTN historically have not liked the MVNO idea, and they just haven't done MVNO deals. So this new company that's been started by Steve Bailey, ex-Virgin Mobile, is piggybacking on Cell C's network. Cell C's created a wholesale team around this MVNO idea, so they're pushing it quite hard. Let's hope MTN and Vodacom change their mind on this, because you know, the more operators that offer this these sort of services, the better. Yeah, they probably won't. They like MTN and Vodacom particularly like the idea of the vertically integrated telco, where they own everything.
But now, do you think Cell C's future or potential future, depending on which way it goes, could have an impact on this? I mean, what happens if Cell C gets sold, or if you know, what would happen with an MVNO that piggybacks off its network?
Yeah, I mean, it's all kind of speculative. I mean, even if they were bought out, say Cell C is sold to Orange or someone like that, I can't imagine why they would stop their MVNO business. It's in Cell C's interest as the third player in the market to get as many people on its network as possible. So I doubt it. I doubt there'd be a change. If anything, I'd imagine that the MVNO model of Cell C's may get more aggressive about it. I think what we do need, and as Orange has pointed out for at least a year now, is we need stronger MVNO regulations developed by ICASA that makes it, I don't know if force the bigger operators to open their networks to MVNOs is the right way of doing it, but certainly there need to be regulations that sort of govern the relationship between the MVNO provider and the mobile network operator. And that's probably something ICASA needs to work on in the short term. Great. So we'll keep an eye on that, and as soon as we can reveal the name of that retailer, we'll bring it to you first on Tech Central. Last item of news this week was actually a conference that I attended, and it gets a bit techie, and I must admit I don't understand the subject entirely. it's one that the engineers get quite excited about, as I noticed at yesterday's conference, which is organized by WAPA, the Wireless Access Providers Association of South Africa. A very good conference held at Neotel's offices in Midrand, where the rather arcane, I would say, topic, but really interesting topic of extremely high frequency spectrum came up. This is spectrum between 30 gigahertz and 300 gigahertz. So much higher than the radio communications spectrum that we're used to. For example, most of the mobile networks run at 900 or 2100 megahertz, or some of them at 1800 megahertz. So this is a much higher frequency. And because it's such high frequency, it's only suited to sort of short distance use, so a kilometer or two rather than tens of kilometers that you get through lower frequencies. But it's fascinating presentations from various industry players, including from William Stuckey, councillor at ICASA, talking about how ICASA has not really attempted to regulate extremely high frequency or EHF spectrum in the past, and how they want to try and open that up now. And there was a lot of discussion about what Europe and North America have done in terms of regulation. It tends to be light touch regulation, if there's any regulation at all, it's mainly used for point-to-point backhaul type services, short-haul backhaul. So if you've got pico cells, small cells, it's great for linking those together wirelessly without needing to trench fiber. So putting it across
the street. It's a good solution, actually, if you think about it.
A very good solution, indeed. But fascinating discussions. And the one that, the two that really interested me and stuff I hadn't heard before was discussions around the attenuation, or the which is a fancy word for the degradation of the signal over distance, and what affects that attenuation. And there was a fascinating discussion around the 60 gigahertz band specifically. I think it was specifically between around 57 gigahertz and around 60, it was just above 60 gigahertz, which suffers from a significant attenuation because of absorption of the signal by oxygen in the atmosphere. So they put it on a screen with a graph showing attenuation as you go up the band. up the frequency spectrum, and there was this massive attenuation spike at 60 gigahertz. I don't know what the reason for that is. Unfortunately, I had to leave the conference before I had a chance to ask the real engineers what the reason for that was, but I can only presume it's got something to do with oxygen and the frequencies that it emits while it's vibrating in the atmosphere. Yes. That's just a guess on my part, but it was fascinating subject. And and then there was another presentation by a chap from a local company called Redline Technologies, where he spoke about I think it was called optical wireless broadband or something along those lines, where they're looking to use frequency around 300 or 400 terahertz. If I'm not mistaken, is infrared frequency, and they're doing some pretty cool stuff around that as well. The big problem with EHF frequencies, so 30 to 300 gigahertz, is that it's very heavily affected by what's called rain fade. Heavy rain like a Joburg thunderstorm is going to affect that signal significantly. The big advantage, as everyone noted at the conference, was that South Africa is actually a fairly dry country. It doesn't actually rain all that much here. When it rains, it tends to come down for a few minutes and then clear up again, certainly up here on the Highveld, and I think over certainly large parts of the interior of South Africa. It's largely a dry country. So South Africa is pretty well suited to using this technology. But interesting about the 300 to 400 terahertz band, which is just below visible light, that band can be used for doing this. I think it was optical wireless broadband, OWB, and that's not affected by rain fade at all. But it is affected by fog, so you can't use it in fog. So the suggestion from this chap from this company was that you could Redline Technologies was that it's well suited as a complementary technology to extremely high frequency technologies, and they can affect the use together. So if there's a heavy thunderstorm, just switch over to the infrared system and use that for your communication, then fall back again to the EHF band. But fascinating subject. Not one we normally discuss in the context of telecommunications. And certainly, while its applications are limited, I mean, it's not something you're not going to be getting your home broadband connection delivered to you over 150 gigahertz wireless link. Although
that would be cool.
Although you could get it over Wi-Fi. Technically, it could be used for Wi-Fi at some point in the future. For small personal area networks, for high speed.
I think there's a lot of application there. I mean, we're not there yet, but if you look at device-to-device communication or within your house, your TV to your phone, or I mean, if you want to transfer large amounts of data, I think that could be a good solution.
Yeah. So, anyway, Rachat, you also did some Googling. We got a little interested here in the office when we started talking about communication over 300 to 400 terahertz spectrum, which is just below visible light. Visible light, if I'm not mistaken, is between 400 and 800 terahertz. That's what you and I can see through our optical system, optical nerve, through our eyes. And we started to wonder, well, has anyone actually tried to use visible light to perform communication? And it turns out, Rachat.
Yeah, they have, apparently. just having a look at what this website says, the technology, we're talking about visible light communication, you can use fluorescent light lamps, ordinary lamps, it has to be said too, to transmit signals only at 10 kilobits a second, though. So if you use, lights that we have around, or, the visible light that we can see, the throughput would be quite slow. But with LEDs, that throughput shoots up to 500 megabits per second, which is a lot more usable, I think, for practical application.
So your normal LED lamp that you'd have in your downlighters or in your... I mean, LED is you walk into any supermarket now and you can buy these lights. So those lights could actually, in theory, be used for communication with the right technology built into them.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think potentially there could also be application within, if you look at computer components, they sit close to each other. You don't have to plug anything. As long as two components sit next to each other, potentially you can have a communication between them.
Now, the one thing I found fascinating about this visible light communication is one of the biggest benefits that's listed. And it's not something I would ever have thought of, but one of the biggest benefits of visible light communication is that it's less dangerous. Why? Because you can see it. You'll avert your eyes from it if it's damaging. Whereas we're talking about microwave communication or something similar, if you're standing in front of a dangerous source of radiation, you're not going to see it until your insides are cooking. Whereas with visible light, you...
Now, if you walk through visible light communication, would you get burnt? Would you still have the same?
I guess it depends on the intensity of the source, but I'd imagine that if it's powerful enough that you would, much like you would get burnt if you still stood in the sun for too long.
Maybe there's a new application for sunbeds, I don't know.
Anyway, so absolutely fascinating subject. I'm going to do some more reading on it. Quite arcane, of course, but I can see why the engineers and the specialists in this field were quite excited at this WAPA conference that was organized this week. It was a really interesting subject. And if you've got any views on that, please do send us a mail and share them. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za, and we'd love to hear from you. Anyway, to wrap up the show, we need to pick our winner and loser and our apps of the week. So let's start with winner and loser this week. Recha, do you want to take that one away?
Yeah, we unanimously decided. There's been a lot of talk in the press recently. We also introduced a story last week talking about Parkhurst and their fiber to the home rollout, pioneered by a guy called Ryan Hawthorne, who's spearheading this for the suburb. And I think definitely the winner, because what they are essentially doing is creating so much awareness about what's possible if a suburb comes together and decide to take matters into their own hands to get fiber into the neighborhoods. So yeah, well done, Ryan. I think what you guys are doing has certainly raised enough awareness, and I think we're going to be seeing a lot of interesting things coming off the back of it. There's already talks of a couple of other suburbs in the area looking at this, planning on rolling out their own fiber solution to two homes in the area.
Indeed, and we've just seen this announcement this week. It's a bit unrelated because it's part of a new project. It's rather than an existing suburb, but we've just seen this massive 6 billion rand Stain City development. It's being built by businessman Dostain, north of Fourways, announcing that the whole area, is all the businesses and homes in that residential area, or that city rather, are going to be fibered up as part of their CCTV security system. But yeah, we're hearing noises all over the place now, not just in Joburg but in Cape Town too, of potential fiber to the home projects that are underway and being led by residents associations and individuals who are keen to get fiber access into their neighborhoods. And I think this is long overdue, and I think it's these associations and these residents who are in fact going to lead fiber to the home, because it's that these guys are going to do the legwork so that the operators seem not too keen to do, and they're going to get the communities behind them, and that's actually 75% of the work. Part of the effort, the big part of the effort, is getting buy-in and getting people to agree to have their pavements dug up again and fiber rolled into their homes. I think that the communities that do this first are the ones that are actually going to get the fiber first.
Definitely, and just on that note, I mean, what I found particularly interesting was they're also looking at above the ground fiber, which means in some neighborhoods where you can't dig trenches, you just roll out your fiber along the street poles.
Indeed, and in fact, Ryan Hawthorne has been saying that Parkhurst has been having discussions with City Power about that, and City Power has apparently been quite welcoming about the idea. So
it's good. Yeah. It makes it a lot more accessible and
cheaper to roll out.
Cheaper, yeah, definitely.
Although the last thing we want to see is a big mess of cables running above ground. Sure. In future, we've seen that in some emerging markets, like I think Pakistan was famous for having cables just running in every direction. So there has to be some sort of regulation and control, because otherwise every Joe is going to be running fiber down the streetlights. There is that option. So anyway, Ryan Hawthorne is our winner this week. Well done, guy, for leading that project and actually showing other areas what can be done. So we're going to be watching that Parkways project with intense interest over the next few months. So our loser this week, I'm not sure whether to make it our president, Jacob Zuma, or to make it the entire ICT sector for his appointments in the space. But as we discussed earlier in the show, bad news. There should have been continuity in the space. There hasn't been. It's going to take months at least before we see any progress again on any of the key issues. So joint loser this week, the ICT sector and our president, Jacob Zuma, for causing the problem. Lastly, what's your app pick this week, Richard?
Well, actually, I'm not picking an app. It's
you're not?
Product that I bought a month or three ago. It's called Google Chromecast.
I know it, yes. How are you finding it?
I'm actually enjoying it. As a cord cutter, so to speak, I don't have a DSTV connection at home. I watch all my content and entertainment
online. For those who don't know what it is, just explain it.
Yeah, sure. Now, the Google Chromecast is basically an HDMI dongle that you plug into your TV. And essentially what it does is it connects to your Wi-Fi, and it allows you to watch any video, or I mean, there's obviously a range of things you can watch, but yeah. You basically flick it from your device, your iPad, your iPhone, your Android device, to your TV. So it's a complementary device. It allows you to effectively...
When you say flick, you mean the content that you have on your...
Yeah, so let me explain that. Essentially, what you do is once you have the Chromecast installed, it's hooked up to your Wi-Fi network, you have to do an installation of the software on your smartphone as well, of the Chromecast software. And then it'll give you an additional functionality in applications like Netflix and YouTube.
Okay.
It puts a little icon on the screen that once you press it, it actually sends the feed that you're watching to the TV. And it takes it over. So if I'm starting up Netflix, which I often do, I can find what I want to watch, like I would do with a remote control. Once I find it, I just press the button that sends it to the screen, and I can then switch off my phone effectively, because now the handover has taken place and the Chromecast dongle grabs the feed directly from the internet. It works really well. It's great for YouTube videos. It's a little more tricky to enable for Netflix if you don't have a VPN solution. Obviously, Netflix isn't yet supported in this country.
Sure.
But at $5.99, it's basically like an Apple TV type of device. You know, it turns your TV into a smart TV essentially. Mm. And there's opportunity for third party developers also to develop software for it. It's still early days for the device. It's been around for probably about a year or so. But I like it. It really works well.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I've got an Intel NUC, next unit of computing. It's basically a small PC attached to my TV that runs Windows 8. So I'm probably not in the market for something like this. But if you don't want to go through the expense, I mean, that's a multi-thousand rand device, the Intel NUC PC. This is a very affordable solution for turning your TV into a smart TV and accessing services like Netflix.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're looking at a cost of $5.99. You can get it a couple of places online. Mm. I bought mine from takealot.com. It's delivered next day. It's quite easy to get. I also got a PC connected to my TV, which I find obviously a lot more useful, a lot more powerful. I can line up downloads if I need to stream things offline later. But certainly a nice device if you don't want to spend too much money and if you want to enjoy entertainment on your TV from the internet.
Cool. Sounds very good. $5.99. That's a pretty good price too.
Very good. Very good. Easy to set up. And it's a Google Chrome product. You know, there's always going to be development on the software and third-party applications.
What, apart from YouTube, what Google services does it push at you?
Well, I haven't played too much with all of that. So far, I've just been streaming. Yeah. It's Google Play, YouTube, and Netflix so far.
Okay. Google Movies, all that sort of thing. If you have a VPN service,
yeah. So I mean, it's obviously for you're not going to be browsing the internet. It's for streaming content, video and audio.
Mm. Interestingly, the rumors are flying thick and fast that the Google movie service is coming to South Africa soon.
Well,
in fact, I saw this week they launched it in Uganda, so I think it's making its way down here.
Well, I mean, that case, the Google Chromecast will certainly become a lot more powerful. I mean, if you can then rent videos, using it, it would be perfect device. I mean, you wouldn't need anything else if you don't download it.
Indeed. Cool. Well, I'm going to do something unusual with my pick this week. I usually pick a smartphone app, but this week I'm going to pick a video game, which is something we don't often do in the show, but it's a really good video game. I'm enjoying it a lot. And it's not often that a really good open world game comes along. It's a little bit of a Grand Theft Auto ripoff, but it's done very well, and the graphics are absolutely fantastic in the PC version anyway. And it's a fantastic open world game set in Chicago. The stuff you can do in game is just fantastic. Krechot, you had a look at it, and some of the chaos you can create.
Well, I mean, what got me about the game was the fact it's a GTA type platform, so you have an open world, but you've got the technology, you're hacking into things. I mean, that to me was the best part of it.
You can hack security cameras, you can hack into other people walking down the street, hack ATMs, you can do all sorts of cool stuff. I mean, I've only just started playing the game, but it's pretty amazing. I got into let's call it an altercation with the police.
Didn't work out too well for you in the end, did it?
It didn't. No, I got shot in the head. But it was great fun while it lasted. Quite realistic chase sequences, and you can cause absolute chaos jumping in and out of cars and ramming vehicles. And at one point, it looked like an entire Chicago City street was going to burn to the ground. But very good game. It's called Watch Dogs. It's available on console, PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, and Xbox One, as well as Windows PC, and it's a very, very good game. And the graphics, as you've seen on the PC version, I presume on the new generation consoles too, is absolutely spectacular. Some of the best graphics I've seen in a video game to date.
I would even take Sacrifice and play it on my Xbox 360, even though I'll take a, you know, the graphics won't be as good. The game certainly seems like it could transcend that. You know, you'll get immersed in the experience.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's games like this that I think are gonna drive next generation consoles, because I've got a pretty high end PC rig, and I think that's the sort of experience you're going to experience on the PS4 and the Xbox One. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then upgrading to the new consoles will be well worth the money spent for this type of game, for sure.
Yeah.
Right, well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. If you have any feedback, our email address, again, if you don't know by now, is info@techcentral.co.za. From Richard and myself, until next time, have a great weekend. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.